9, I'll read step 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step 9. You can all join in if you want to help out. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others.
Gary, I'm an alcoholic. I died December 3rd, 1964, which means I'm sober longer than many of you are old, and I just like to bring that up first. I have the good fortune of being one of the members of the group of men who went through the book as a group in Denver, because we got the idea from some men in a group in Winnipeg, Canada. And one of us was more attuned than the rest of us in what we might do with that. And so we went through the book and the steps with the best of what we had. And each of us kind of went out on our own. I, shortly after that, ended up effectively running away and moving to Indianapolis, Indiana. I shouldn't really phrase it that way, because it wasn't done without prayer and thought and discussion with my wife Julie and that. But you say a prayer, and the next day you get a phone call from a guy in Nashville, Tennessee, saying, "I'd sure like you to come out here and go to work for me in the Midwest." And I'm thinking about that. I went to the Denver Young People's meeting a few nights later, and I said, could that have been an answer to prayer? And one of the girls in that says, "Sure beats hell out of a bolt of lightning." And so effectively, to oversimplify things, we packed up and moved out there. And so and that's just an aside that what happened. So most of the things I'm talking about was after we left Denver. And that, and I had kind of lost my way because I was out of the womb, so to speak. I didn't have the daily regular contact that Don and I and Bob and a bunch of us had and that sort of thing. And I don't know that I would have used them as well as I could have had I been in Denver, because I got away from that and things changed. And my behavior fell back sober to a point that I had friends now who know me since I went and took some fifth steps with them about that time that can't believe I stayed sober. And if you look back on that, it's hard to believe that I stayed sober. So anyway, I think I'll share with you what happened after that and with that amends trip, largely because it was a much better job of it, frankly, than what I did the first time. Was at best was half-assed, and that's the best I can say about it. But I found myself in serious trouble emotionally and financially and any other way you want to look at it. My conduct had been bad in all areas of my life. And the day came when I called a guy called Paul M. He lived in Chicago. And I had met him years ago here in Denver and that. And I knew him as a step Nazi, and I knew that's what I had to get back to somehow. And there wasn't anybody in Indianapolis that I found that had any experience with the book and the steps, and I felt as bad as I was, I knew more about AA than they did, but they weren't screwing up like I was. But I called him one day, and I said, "Is there any possibility that a man with 23 years of sobriety, a grandfather, and all this going on in his life could be going through male menopause?" And Paul said, "Well, maybe. But I think if you review your first three steps as hard as you can, write another inventory, and come up and take some fifth steps, we can put you and make go ahead and make some amends. Your life will change, and I'll do that." And I know what I said to him is, "I'll do anything you say." And I think I meant it more than when I first had been through the steps and had my first idea that I was really a real alcoholic. And I really was helpless, and I couldn't manage my life. I'm sure that was my case. So anyway, I did. I wrote an inventory, and I had written any number of attempts at inventories, and this one I wrote an entirely new resentment list. These were not old ones that had reappeared. Not that that doesn't happen on occasion, but not this time. This was all current stuff. What you think about it really ought to scare you a little bit anyhow, because that means we're able, or at least I'm able, to cause as much or more harm stone sober as I ever did in my drinking and my early sobriety. And I did the fear list, and that was like a lot of the same old stuff and a lot of the current stuff in that. But in my conduct inventory, I went back as far as I could, and I remembered everybody I could possibly remember, and I took them through the 9 questions, each one of them, and wrote that, and I called Paul, and I told him that I was finished. And he told me to be at a motel in, out in LaGrange, Illinois, on the west side of Chicago, and to be there by, I don't know what it was, 6-7 o'clock on a Friday night. And I found the motel, and I ran across, got my room, went across the street, got a cup of gas station coffee, and brought it back. And there was a knock on my door, and the guy said he was Dennis O'Brien. He was 29 years sober. He was there to swap fifth steps with me. And so I took a fifth step with him and 8 other guys over the weekend. And at the end of the weekend, Paul said, come meet us at this pancake house that I, for what it's worth, I've had lots of breakfast there since then, but and meet us there. And we went there, and there were 3 or 4 of the guys that had taken the fifth steps with there. And they suggested that I take my pad and pencil out, and they would help me with my amends list. And they really had good memories. So I did. We took the last time. And we went through that. And Paul asked the question, how about those people that you owe amends to that are not on your resentment list? He made it really clear. And that literally made up probably half my amends list at that point in time. Over the years, Julie and I had accumulated a great deal of debt, borrowing from parents, from AA members, from Dial Finance and all that, and signing the legal work to make sure you pay it back. And apparently I had no intentions of paying any attention to the legal work with that. And so they all ended up on that. And the guys were there. Some of them, like I say, Paul at that point in time must have had about crowding 40 years of sobriety, but the other guys were 29 years. And I'm taking fifth steps with guys with 2 or 3 years. And they're pulling rank on me, and that was my job with 23 years, you know. And so they couldn't believe I had stayed sober through that. They said, how in the hell did you do that? What happened? And there must be a God, because I don't have any other answer for that. That's the only thing it could be. And just an aside now, I've been around a long, long time. I've met people all over the country and the world and that sort of thing. And I got to tell you, most of those that have had significant sobriety, whatever significant is, I don't want to put a year on it, because there's some really significant sobriety out there. We've heard them up here today with less than 4 or 5 years. But those that seem to go back out and drink do so with unfinished amends. I just want to throw that out. The people that didn't show up for this one, I relate to, because I guarantee you, I was not showing up at 8th and 9th Steps workshops anywhere I was until after I got caught up in this. So if you're looking for somebody to pray for, why don't you throw them on your list? So I went back with my instructors to start. We got to find a way to start doing that. And I sat down and I showed the list to Julie. And she had been with me with many of those trips to parents and people to borrow money from and that. And she felt that these things were as much her amends as mine. And so she agreed to what it was going to take to do that. So that was on a Tuesday night. We decided we would start with her parents. And so I called and her dad answered the phone. And the financial amends weren't handled by him. They were handled by Julie's mom. But I owed him amends. And I did the best I could do on the phone with him that now. Then I thanked him for the kindness had shown me all the years of my misbehavior, even drunk and sober. And I knew that I had worried him sick about the way I had treated Julie and our children, his grandchildren. Because he loved them probably more than I did. I mean, he really did. And then I made a mistake, and I told him that I was there because I had to do some things to show that I could put some character in my life. And I made a mistake, and I told him that I loved him. And he said, "Aw, shit," and he gave the phone to Grandma. And so I went through the same routine with her, and I got down to that. I did not tell her I loved her because I knew she'd hang up. I said, "Have you any idea how much money you've given us over the years?" And she said, "Right down to the last penny." So we made arrangements to start paying that back. Another person I had to call was an AA member in Minnesota who we had become speakers, friends at a young people's conference. That was before they called it YPA or IKIPA or PUKIPA or whatever it is. And you got to understand, I got a little attitude about that because the Denver Young People's Group was an AA group. It wasn't a movement. And I'm sorry, we're really not seeing that at that one hand. But then on the other hand, there seem to be helping a lot of kids, don't they? It's working well. So maybe I ought to shape up. Years before that, my friend Bob from Minnesota had called me because we had made friends at this conference down in Houston, and he said, "I'm on my way to talk how much time do I have?
15.
Okay. He just stopped by to see us. We'd become good friends. And again, you got to flash back here a little bit because when I met him at the airport, when he stopped by to see us, he said, "You look like hell. What's going on?" And I hadn't told him about the financial position I put ourselves in. And I said, "I'm worried sick." I said, "They're going to foreclose on our home tomorrow morning. And Julie doesn't know that. And I'm afraid it'll kill her." And I got relief from that. And I really did. So we're driving past downtown on the way out to where we live. And Bob said, "Where's your bank?" "It was the bank." And I said, "What bank?" He says, "The one that has a note on your house." And he said, I said, "Well, just right downtown." And so he says, let's go talk to them, see what we can get them to do. And I said, "Bob, they really don't want any more talk. They're damn tired of talk." So we went down there. He walked in. We sit down. There's a very angry banker there. And Bob's up by the desk. I'm back trying to get in the corner. And this guy came out with a stack of papers, and Bob says, "What's it going to take to get Gary caught up on his mortgage?" The guy looked and gave him a number, and Bob reached in his pocket and pulled out a roll of checks, traveler's checks and cash, and covered a big nut we had there, right then and there. And I watched him do it. We were caught up at that minute. Walked out the door, and I'm stunned. Can't tell you how stunned I was. And I said, "I got to pay that back." And he said, "It's your problem." I had no clue how right he was. So at any rate, to pass on, there was a couple other instances there. We fought paying it back for quite a while, and we weren't making that headway, because, you know, I couldn't cover everything with one paycheck. He went down and he spent all the money he had, saved gas and grocery money, and went to the next payday, and we'd do that. Julie and I talked about it one day, and she said, "Maybe we could sell a house, cash in your retirement, and pay off all the bills, and kind of get things going on, make all those amends that way." I thought she was crazy, but we did that. And with some coaching from my sponsor, he didn't think that was my idea to do that. When I told him it wasn't, he said he thought so. He thought it was Julie's. So, We did that. We did that. It took a few months to sell the house, and I called around and I got all those bills, amends I'd started to make over the years and all that, and I got the number and we set the check, and we moved into a mobile home in the north end of town, but we were free, and it really was. And that place was free, and I haven't dodged anything like that. Oddly enough, we haven't been in serious financial trouble since then. It's not that we've made a hell of a lot of money or done all that. Then a few years ago, Julie says, you know, you're going to die before I do. Maybe I ought to learn how to handle a checkbook. Well, clearly she could do a better job than I did. And so she took over, I don't know what it was, 2, 3, 4 years ago. And it's great because we always got money. That wasn't the case when I did it. I don't understand it. I really do understand it. And I have no interest at all in changing it. I think I would say that anymore, I feel derelict if I let a sponsee get away and not keep my foot in him about getting through the steps. And anymore, I don't get many new guys. I find myself getting what Paul was getting with all his sobriety. He died with 62 years sober and that, but from the time he was 35 or so, because there weren't many 35 years so at that time, he was one of the few, he was getting the old-timers like me with 20, 23 years who were showing up with the jam on their face and their fannies hanging out because they'd been behaving badly sober and doing those things. Well, guess who I'm getting now? And we're a problem, thank you. We're a problem because we already know it all. And so I get to work with that, and it's helpful to me, and every once in a while I get to help some of them. But thank you very much.
Thank you to all the panelists. We'll now open the mic for sharing on step 8 and 9. Thank you.